All right, hi everybody, and welcome to Lecture 55 in this ancient history program of History at Our House. We're continuing with the Greco-Persian War, and today we're going to get to, well, a good part of it in the sense that by the time we're done today, the Greeks are going to have the upper hand. So it's going to be more positive. They're going to turn things around. We're going to reach what you would call the turning point in the war, which is nice. And from another angle, you could say we're going to go from the two greatest defeats in the war to the two greatest victories. So that is going to be positive. So we're going to look at that momentarily here. But for what it's worth, I wanted to tell you what I'm going to do tonight, which is not, I don't usually share my social life with you guys, but here's what I'm going to go do tonight, and you can all join me, because you don't have to do it in any particular city. It's all over, I don't know, all over North America, but, you know, at least all over the U.S., and you can Google it, and it's a special company. It's called Fathom Events, and they do fantastic things. They put operas in movie theaters, and they now have created a tour of the city that is the very heart of the Renaissance. So if you want to understand what the Renaissance is and how beautiful it is, and by the way, this is the goddess Venus. If you want to understand, this is a painting by a Renaissance artist of the goddess Venus. You can go to see a movie called, it's just Florence and the Uffizi Gallery. That's the name of a museum. And at the Uffizi Gallery, you have the statue of Michelangelo's David, which is the greatest sculpture of all time. And it is just, it's going to be a chance. The reason why I mention this to you guys is because it's going to be a chance for you to see art larger than it usually is. As opposed to, in history at our house, in history through art, we see art smaller than it usually is. So it's less spectacular than it really is, and is not as exciting, nearly as exciting as it could be. But if you go to this movie tonight with your family, great idea for a cultural event for your family. If you go to see this tonight, you will get to see statues and paintings larger than life. You will get to see the beautiful, incredible details of these works of art up close, and you will just, I think you will be stunned, because Florence is certainly one of the most beautiful places in the whole world, and the museum pieces that are there are some of the most beautiful in the entire world. And so this is a chance for you to go to Florence without having to leave the U.S., right? I mean, it's just, it's going to be fantastic. So if you don't have plans for tonight, and you're thinking of sitting down and watching some boring television, don't you dare. Go ahead and be spectacularly transformed by seeing the greatest art in history. Good idea, good plan, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, that's what we're doing. So, we'll report to you back tomorrow about this incredible event. I'm sure it's in all major cities and theaters and so on. So, we'll report to you back tomorrow, and hopefully the rest of you will also be raving about how you got a chance to do it. And I don't know if and when it will repeat. I suspect it might be more than once in the future at some point. But as far as currently, they don't have plans for any repeating event. So it is the 27th, and that's it. So good luck to you all if you can make it. I hope for your sake that you can. All right, so that's my cultural event recommendation here for the day. Let's get back to our story of the ancient Greeks and the original birth that's going to summon and motivate the rebirth later on. So we have this great threat that is bearing down on Greece. We have the Persian army, the largest ever assembled. crawling along here through the mountain passes and coming down here. And we have the Persian Navy shadowing it by sea, crossing the canal instead of going to that dangerous spot over there. And then side by side and so on, coming down to this site. And then we have these two great battles. And they are going to be, sadly, two great defeats for the Greeks. They're hard to read on here, so I'm going to go ahead and type them again, try to find an easier place. Thermopylae is one of the two great defeats. That's the one that happens right here on land. Okay, the Battle of Thermopylae. And that is where the 300 Spartans led by Leonidas gave their lives in order to delay the Persian advance and ultimately contribute to the victory of the Greeks. And then I'm not a big fan of the spelling on this map, so I'm going to use a little bit of a different spelling, pardon me. Artemisium is my... sometimes historians use different spellings for certain things. And that is the naval battle that happened at the same time. So we have Thermopylae and Artemisium, and they were both defeats. But yesterday, we talked about how a defeat can be a good defeat, or there can be different kinds of defeats, and some of them can serve a greater purpose. And of course, the point is that a battle is part of a war, and you would like to win every battle, but the real purpose of fighting a war is not to win battles. The purpose of a war is to win the war. So that then is why I consider these to be the two great defeats of the Greco-Persian War, because they contributed to the ultimate victory. And we are now going to pass on to the second stage of this story, and we are going to have the two great victories that will turn the tide. We're going to reach that turning point. And so we'll get to that here shortly. And so that's where we're at. And we know that, well, actually, I should have left those, I'm sorry, and I'm not going to redraw them, but let's just draw lines from where things are now. This is Thermopylae, and this is Artemisium. Okay, so now the Persians are going to continue, and they're going to come, and they are going to attack by sea and by land. Well, remember, what do we do? How do we prepare? The great debate within Athenian society. Do we make a navy or do we make an army? And well, the debate proved to be it was the people who decided to have a navy that won the debate. So what's that going to mean for this arrow here? The great Persian army is coming. What's going to happen to Athens? They didn't make an army to stop the Persians. What's going to happen to Athens? Well, you might not be too surprised to find out. It's not going to be good. Now, where would you go if you were the Greeks to try to find an answer? Perhaps to get some, we might say, divine guidance for to know what to do here. Where did the Greeks go when they wanted a little bit of that divine inspiration? Opal? Go ahead, Opal. Okay. Wyatt, Henry.
This is Henry.
Yes.
Delphi.
Very nice. What was at Delphi, Henry?
The Oracle of Delphi.
Excellent. Right, the Oracle. And the Oracle was this priestess that would inhale these noxious gases and then give some very strange-sounding advice. And so that people thought that it was a kind of way in which she would serve as a conduit for the messages of the gods. And here's the message that she gave the Greeks. Hopefully you guys can read this font. I made it into a kind of stylish font because I didn't want it to be regular typing. And so let me go ahead and it's almost like cursive. So let me go ahead and read to you the message of the oracle to the Greeks. Here come the Persians, right? And here's what the oracle says. Far-seeing Zeus grants to thrice-born Athena a wooden wall. The only place not to be sacked, it will help you and your children. Do not wait for the great host coming from the continent. Cavalry and foot soldiers, turn your back and withdraw from the foe. Eventually you will stand opposite them. O divine Salamis, you will destroy the sons of women. Patrick is cringing because he doesn't know how to interpret the meaning of the oracle. Not an easy message, is it? Zeus, of course, is the greatest of the gods, right? The father of the gods. And he grants to Athena. Athena is who? She is Zeus's daughter, but she is also the goddess of what city? Such a mystery. Julia.
Athens,
right? Athens, Athena. Yes, indeed. So she was the patron goddess of Athena. So the idea is Zeus, the god, will give to the city of Athens a wooden wall. Oh, what does that sound like to you guys? Some kind of fortifications, right? Where you can hide behind a wooden wall. The only place not to be sacked. Oh, okay, so it sounds like that the oracle is talking about how you will be safe. The Persians won't be able to attack you. It will help you and your children, right? Oh, but then it's kind of strange because the oracle says, don't wait, run away. Now, wait a minute. So, what could this wooden wall be if the oracle is saying that you're going to have a wooden wall that will help you, but you should run away? And then the hint comes here. O divine Salamis. What is Salamis? Sigourney, go ahead.
The wooden wall is the blockade of ships. A navy.
A navy, right? What are ships made out of? They're made out of wood. The Athenians have ships. They have a lot of wood, but it's been made into ships. Not really a wall, but you could kind of take it in a poetic sort of way. You could say that a wall of ships would be like a wooden wall. And that kind of fits because guess what Salamis is? It's an island away from Athens, next to Athens. So, let's see here. Let's go back to here, and let's zoom in on. Here's Athens over here. It says 7 miles away. And then here's the island Salamis. This is not necessarily the best map to look at. So let's go back to the overall map just to get a big picture look here, right? If we zoom in even further on down here and put it in the center, here's Athens. Right? The black dot. And then here is the island of Salamis. Okay, and you can see the Persian fleet, the pink line is going to come in here now, right? And so, what does the advice mean? And so now we go back to the close-up view. Salamis is the island. We can't see the whole of it here. And Athens is over there. And so what did the Greeks do? Well, they abandoned Athens, which sounds pretty sad, doesn't it? So they did not defend the city because they did not believe it could be defended. So they gave up. And the Spartans and their allies went and they created... They kind of played both sides here because, as the expression goes, because they went to where the Peloponnesian Peninsula begins, the little really narrow piece of land, and they built a wall there. So they thought, hey, maybe that's what the oracle means. If we make a wall that, and we can block the Spartan army at that spot, is the best spot to do it, then we might succeed there. But on the other hand, of course, the Athenians believed that Salamis was the best place to put their soldiers. So they went to Salamis, the city was abandoned, and the Athenian fleet was placed here, next to Salamis. Now, this is a very interesting spot, and this is the only other military history type of map that we're going to look at here, because once again, we have this gigantic force. And what problem does that gigantic force have if it wants to attack this force? Kind of reminiscent of Thermopylae. What's the problem? Sigourney?
They have to break into smaller groups, the Persians do.
Yeah, they have to be willing to compress their fleet and take smaller groups and put them in here. Right? So that's like smaller numbers of soldiers trying to attack the Spartan phalanx, right? They are going to be at a disadvantage. It's going to be hard for them to use their numbers to any advantage. In fact, in this battle, it's going to be very hard because it's going to be so tight, such tight quarters for them to be able to fight. So it was a little bit of a naval version of the Battle of Thermopylae, where the Greeks once again found a way to get the advantage for themselves. And so the details are a little bit hard to know about. One interesting thing that I do want to bring to your attention, because I want you to remember this name later. So it's the name Phoenicians. So I want you to notice it here on the map. I'll put a rectangle around it. The Phoenicians were a part of the Persian Empire, but they were the best sailors and naval warriors of the Persian Empire. Why? And why do I want you to remember this? Well, let's go back to our map of Persia. And by the way, I posted it to the class webpage so you can print it off for yourself if you want it. If you look over here, once again, I'll put a rectangle around it. I'll try to make it as bright as I can. Let's go with bright pink. So if you look down here, this part of, all right, I'm going to put a circle around it kind of thing. This is Phoenicia. See how it's labeled right there? A little bit hard to read. But kind of where Syria and Lebanon and Israel are today. Okay, that coastline of the Mediterranean. So not surprisingly, the people who lived here were the best at seagoing activity, right? They were traders, they were merchants on the sea, and they were better at fighting naval battles because they spent more time on the water. The Persians are this big land army. They spend all their time on land. So not surprisingly, it was the Phoenicians that they relied on very much in their attack on Greece. So I'll ask you to remember that when we get to Roman history. And so anyway, and of course I will help you when we come back to it. So the Phoenicians are here labeled especially because they were the most able of the enemy attack force. And then you have the Athenians and you have some Spartans even and allies and so on. And they're gonna have this huge naval battle in these tight quarters. They were expert at it and they succeeded. And my favorite part about the story of the Battle of Salamis is that Xerxes was sitting here on a throne on the cliff, was surrounded by his army, right? Because the Persian army had come and had sacked Athens and they were roaming around unchecked because the Greeks were on Salamis. they had retreated because that's what the oracle said to do. So meanwhile, Xerxes is sitting over here on his throne. It looked kind of like this, like, you know, there's his throne. Xerxes over here. There he is. So Xerxes is over here. Now he stood up because he's really upset. So he's looking down and he's looking and they're all losing and it's an absolute disaster. And so now he's scared. Because having his army and having his fleet were, it was, there were two very important things. Because, especially because the fleet was crucial to bringing supplies. Remember what we said about a large army on the move. What is one of its biggest problems? An entire city moving from place to place. What's the big problem? Patrick?
Food.
Food, yeah, supplies, right? Because a city can feed itself or be fed because it's standing still and everybody knows where to take the food, right? But if you have a moving city, then you better make sure that the guys who are bringing the food know where you are and can get to you. And in ancient times, before the Industrial Revolution, absolutely the best place, the best way to move anything was by water. So, and it remains one of the best ways to do it today. So, if you want to take anything heavy from one continent to another nowadays, you don't put it in a plane. That's too hard. You can put much heavier things in a boat. And so if you want to get all the grain that your army is going to need to have the bread and so on, right, you need to take it in a boat. And you need to make sure that the enemy's fleet is not going to destroy your supply lines. Otherwise, you've got a city, not an army, but rather a city of starving warriors. And that's not going to do you any good. Right? So Xerxes was really upset by this defeat at the Battle of Salamis. And so he decided to go back to Persia. He was afraid for himself. So he personally was demoralized. And this is really, really crucial. And so Salamis is one of the two great victories. One of the two great victories. And we're going to mark the other one shortly here. So I'm going to go ahead and go back to our main map of Greece and show you the other one. So we come here to Salamis, and once again, I will label it so that it's easier to read. So we have we have Salamis here, which is marked right here. That's the naval battle that's such a big deal. And then, so Xerxes leaves, and he asks his brother-in-law to stay with the other half of the army, hoping that that will be enough to clean up the mess. And then they retreat and engage a Greek army here. And the other battle that is the turning point here in terms of the land battle, I'm going to write it down in brighter yellow letters as well. Plataea, which is pretty hard to spell. Because it is Plataea. Those Greek words never have easy spelling, do they? So sometimes it's A-E, like in Thermopylae, and sometimes it's A-E-A, like in Plataea. So, oh gosh. So I would say if you happen to get Plataea wrong as a bonus point on your test, you probably are allowed to have one bonus point with the spelling wrong. But try your best anyway. So these are the two crucial battles, and the Greeks put together the biggest army they ever had made and defeated Xerxes' son-in-law at Plataea. Patrick, what is it?
You mean like the test on week 24?
Week 24? What?
I'm pretty sure there's a week calculations the next
Test will be week 24. Yeah, I can't promise because the schedule has changed a little bit based on my projections, but it's coming in a few weeks' time, 3 or 4 weeks probably. Yeah, so we'll see. Okay, so anyway, this is the turning point. These two great victories, one at Salamis and one at Plataea. And now the Persians are in retreat. Xerxes has gone back to Persia, and he is pretty scared of the Greeks. And so now the question becomes, well, what to do now that you have the advantage? Do you just say, all right, we will... Let's be happy that it's over. They're gone, right? Or what? And, of course, there were different answers to this question. Some people would say, well, okay, they went away. Let's get back to our lives. Let's try to, you know, to live with this. Thank goodness it's over. Sigourney?
The Greeks could also go after them.
Yeah, that's the alternative, right? And the Athenians were anxious to do that. Because the Athenians were the ones that had known most of the punishment, most of the pain in this war, because they had had to deflect the Battle of Marathon 10 years earlier. That was the second expedition. And they were the ones that had their city sacked in 480 and fought the Battle of Salamis and the Battle of Artemisium, and they had a greater experience of the damage of this war and felt more strongly about the need to basically send a message to Persia. Don't ever come back. Right? Not just, okay, we beat you once, and then maybe you're going to go back and rally your forces and try again. But rather, we want you to understand that when you do this to us, you're going to get nothing but pain. And so we're going to teach you a lesson, basically. And so the Athenians decided to put together an alliance to now take the war to the Persians. To take the war to the Persians. And so this alliance, I think, is labeled on my next map. Is it on here? Well, not quite. So this is the map that I chose because I didn't want all the details. I didn't want everybody getting caught up in the details. I like this one because it's really simple. I haven't found a better one. But what the reason why you like this one is a few reasons. One is it shows so clearly the parts of Greece in green here, drab kind of a green, that joined Athens in an alliance at the end of the war. And look how many there are, right? It's a large segment of the Greeks. And they joined the Athenian alliance. And now let me write the name, the formal name of that alliance for you. I'll type it on the screen. So it was called the Delian League. And the reason was, and pardon me if I happen to pick the wrong one, there was an island here, probably right about here, called Delos. And it's kind of at the center. And that's where they kept their treasury, which means the gold and the silver that the Allies contributed to the cause. And so this is called the Delian League. And so this now the Greeks were going to push in and fight the Persians more aggressively. They were going to attack the Persians, not defend themselves against the Persians, but now they were going to go on the offensive. However, the ones that are labeled in orange and pink did not. Now hold on, I noticed that I have a question, I believe. Is it you, Opal? Are you having sound issues today? All right, if you do have a question, raise your hand, please. So the Delian League now was going to attack the Persians. But the other reason why I wanted to show you this map is because as we get, unfortunately, it seems I can't hear you, Opal. So so I'll try to answer your question through the chat. But let me just finish with my point here, and that is that the ones in orange and pink did not join in the attack. They didn't want to. So we already start to see, after Plataea, we already start to see the allies, well, not so much, you know, disagreeing, or not so much agreeing with each other anymore, right? Because it's relatively easy for two sides to agree when they equally hate the enemy and they're equally afraid of the enemy. But if the enemy is in retreat, then it's, well, you've got more options, right? You no longer have that kind of powerful motive, which is the enemy of my enemy is my ally, right? My temporary ally. So the other Greeks, especially the Spartans, didn't think that it was necessary to go and attack the Persians. So there started to be a division among the Greeks. And very sadly, that division is going to increase over time. And this is one of the first great examples in history of this rule. The enemy of my enemy is not my friend. That is the trap. That is the phrase that people use, and it is a trap. It's not true. Sparta and Athens were not friends. They didn't like each other. They had different forms of government. The only reason why they were working together was because they had a common enemy. But we have now reached the point where the common enemy is not nearly as impressive. The common enemy is in retreat. So what happens to temporary allies who are not friends? When that one reason that they have to work together goes away. Sigourney?
They become enemies.
Possibly, right? They certainly, their quote-unquote friendship falls apart. Right? Because it's not a friendship. The enemy of my enemy is not my friend. He's just somebody who's willing to kill my enemy side by side with me. But that's not the definition of a friend. A friend is somebody who shares the same values as you. Okay? It's a positive relationship, not a negative one. So yeah, we're going to get to, sadly, we're going to go from a war in which the Greeks are fighting the Persians to a time in which the Greeks are fighting each other. It's very sad. But luckily, that's not going to prevent the Golden Age from happening. This, at least, was a positive time. After 479, things were generally positive in Greece, and the situation was better, and they were on the offensive, and it was a positive time. So, when we return next week, we're going to make the transition from this one conflict to the next, sadly. And look at what Greece was like after they had defeated Persia. Now, it seems to me that I have a... Let me get rid of the annotations. Hopefully you got your self-test questions there done. Let me turn to that chat question because it looked like Opal was having a problem. So Opal says, did the Oracle actually give them good advice? And so, well, the Oracle gave a very poetic version of what we would call advice, right? And the Greeks figured out a way to act that turned out to be pretty much like what the Oracle had said. So, yeah, you could say in that regard that they were fortunate that the Oracle's pronouncements turned out to be worth using, or that they could find a way to use them positively. So that's about what I would say about that. All right, so one last recommendation now that we're done with our Greco-Persian War here is just to go back and end on this note once again in case you needed further encouragement. Tonight is the showing of this wonderful documentary about the Renaissance, and so perhaps you get a chance to go see it. So, good luck. Thanks, everybody. We'll be looking at art on the small screen tomorrow. Bye for now.
Bye.